the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
We are turning our attention to rugby. We'll get to Alan Quinlan in just a moment. But are Leinster the greatest Irish club side in any sport ever, Nathan?
Oh, they've got to be right up there. Kilkenny Hurlers, Dublin Footballers. That's sort of the shortlist at this stage, I guess. But, well, they're on the cusp of achieving absolute greatness. They just got to finish the job.
Yeah.
And that's where the pressure is going to be racked up now. Like, from here to not go and finish the season and win the European Champions Cup would sort of be seen as a failure. Well, they are that good.
It'll definitely be a disappointment. And I think that features on your pressure rankings a little bit later on. Alan Quinlan, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm good, Jaron. Yourself?
I think Ulster actually played about as well as they could do for the first 25, 35 minutes of the game. And even then, I don't know, was it ever in doubt?
I think the game probably finished when Robbie Henshaw gets the intercept. I think that just deflates Ulster and takes away any little bit of belief that they have. And in fairness, they kept trying. They passed the ball more. They had more possession, more territory, Ulster. But Leinster are just so good with the ball. Without the ball was probably the most oppressive on Saturday. They just took away any sort of momentum Ulster had. And Ulster needed a bit of a break, a pass to stick, or a little bit of laziness, or Leinster switching off somewhere in the defensive line. And they kept knocking on the door in the first half. And that's why Leinster are so good. You know, their resilience, they dig deep in defence, and they're shrewd in the way they defend as well. Whether they attack the breakdown or whether they just fan out, they're good. They read that very, very well. And as I said, Ulster had a lot of possession, but just couldn't penetrate. And some of those offloads maybe that kind of stuck last week Leinster didn't allow that to happen on Saturday. So you just had the feeling at the end of the game that it was. I mean this respectfully, that it was the gulf in class was quite big. And maybe Munster aren't that bad after all, that they can run Leinster so close in the first game and in the semi-final. But, you know, Leinster are just so powerful and so resilient. And so many of their players had, you know, big performances. I thought Andrew Porter was outstanding, you know, for a tight head prop. Caelan Doris was brilliant again. Josh van der Fleer, Ross Byrne coming in for Sexton. Gary Ringrose being the captain and showing brilliant leadership qualities in his performance as well. Probably not someone who's as vocal as maybe Sexton, but just leads from the front with the way he plays. And James Lowe, again, full of energy. And they were very, very impressive. That was the most impressive game. And they probably have to take it up another level for Saracens next Saturday.
Yeah, that's the next question was, where's the room for improvement? Because they will have to improve. Saracens are better than Ulster at the moment.
Just probably holding on to the ball a little bit more. They had a few turnovers again at the weekend. And Ulster made a fight of it. They were physical, they were aggressive, and they disrupted them. The line-out is probably a little bit of an issue as well, that there's some a concern. I think Leo Cullen spoke about that. So you've got to, you know, I think Saracens are a team that's, their sole focus will be on this game from, you know, when they got the 70-point deduction, were effectively relegated. They lost two pool games against Racing and Munster in the pool rounds in Europe. Leinster 6 out of 6. The only other side to do that were Toulouse. And their reward is Saracens. Probably, they wouldn't say this, but at the time you just think, oh God, you know, that's the last team you want to play against in a knockout stage, particularly with all the issues they've had, all the negativity, all the criticism, that a lot of it is justified. And, you know, Mark McCall has done a great job in Saracens in the last number of years. Some would say they've outside of the rules, but they've still produced a lot of players in their academy. You look at someone like Maro Itoje. A couple of years ago, he was in their academy. 2 years later, he's a British and Irish line. So they have produced a lot of good players, and their academy has been very powerful. And part of it is kind of a little bit like the way Leinster produced so many players through their academy as well. So themselves and Leinster are the two probably most powerful sides in Europe. And the Saracens will be a bit weakened, obviously, with Owen Farrell gone. They've played seven games since they've come back in the Premiership, but they've just mixed and matched and tried to integrate, get some game time for their internationals, and they've won four, lost three. You couldn't read anything into that. But I think Farrell is a big loss to them. That's a massive boost for Leinster. No crowd is going to take away that probably home advantage a little bit. A lot of these Sarries players have been there with England and won in Dublin before. So Leinster need to improve, I think, you know, and there's room for improvement there. And I think they'll take a lot of confidence out of the composure and the control of that performance on Saturday. As I said, it looked like, was it ever in doubt? I don't think so. To be fair to Ulster, you know, they gave it everything, but they looked bruised and battered at the end, that they had no answer. I think even Ian Henderson talking afterwards said, look, the gap is massive. And even without the ball, I think one other area, Ger, is you can't let a team like Saracens have 58% possession, because they have an ability to hurt you with their relentless pressure and with the quality that they have. You know, someone like Brad Barrett, Maitland, Elliot Daly, these guys can hurt you in the back line. Atoje will make it really difficult. Jackson Ray, the Vunipola brothers. You know, you can roll off a lot of very, very powerful, strong characters there who won't be daunted by the fact that they're playing Leinster. They'll understand how good Leinster can be, but they'll feel that they can physically get in amongst them and really pack more of a punch than, say, Munster have done in the last few weeks, or Ulster at the weekend. They certainly can hurt teams with their physicality. And, you know, Billy Vunipola, Maka Vunipola, if they're in the game, they can really, you know, cause problems for any opposition at international level, at any level. So there is room for improvement and maybe holding on to possession a little bit more and fixing the line out and being a bit more accurate with their opportunities.
Do we now know the exact pecking order of who is behind Johnny Sexton after Ross Byrne's performance?
Yeah, I think so. I think he was very assured in his performance. And I think, look, it's a very good position to be in as a fly half, where you have a pack in front of you. You have a dominant back row who are making lots of carries. They're making incredible tackles, turning the ball over, putting so much pressure on the opposition, and giving, you know, quality ball. Their accuracy, the breakdown was very, very good at the weekend, Leinster. And, you know, when any fly half gets good quality possession on the front foot, it's much easier to play. So I think he was very, very good. And he is back as number two to Johnny Sexton for the internationals, for sure.
He's only 6 months older than Joey Carberry, and we still think of Joey Carberry as this young player. Like, he's, just check he's 25. These are the years where he will still be maturing, still learning how to control games, still learning how to think your way through matches where you're on the back foot, which actually you don't get that much opportunity to do at Leinster.
Yeah, and I think one area where his presence, you'd like to see him more dominant and be more aggressive with his carries and stuff like that and taking the ball to the game. But that comes with confidence, Jaron, for any player.
And there was a bit of that on Saturday night.
Yeah, there was, yeah. When you're on the front foot, it's much easier. I think when you... Saturday is probably going to be a bit different if Ross Byrne is starting, because you're getting far more pressure. And I suppose the luxury for Leinster is they have an ability to control that pressure in most games they play because they're dominant up front. But, you know, I said this before the game. He's stepped into this situation before where he's played in these big games and they put Sexton on the bench for semi-finals and a couple of finals. And he stepped up and delivered, I think. International level is another step up. And, you know, it's an area that you'd like to see him kick on now and be dominant and go to Irish training and you know, be vocal and you know, really come out of his shell a little bit more, because you feel he's just he has been playing within his shell a little bit. And it's very understandable when you have someone so dominant as the starting 10, such a leader and so much experience and what Johnny Sexton has achieved. But Ross Byrne has the ability to take his game up another level, and he showed some of that quality again on Saturday. But it's about confidence. Any fly half, it's about confidence, being on the front foot, and he has that luxury at the moment.
Can I ask
Alan, there was a good reminder there when you were going through the Saracen team of the quality that is there, even in the absence of Owen Farrell. And when you look at Leinster, you're talking about Ulster, that you never really thought they were going to win that game. Is there any worry that somehow Leinster might be a little bit undercooked for the level of attrition that might be coming in this game, that there might be the Saracens might bring a ferocity that just hasn't been there so far this season for Leinster?
It's a really good question, Nathan, and it's one that we would have, when I played, it was always a concern. If you have an easy win or a less attritional win, are you battle hardened and ready for the week after? We've seen Leinster rotate their squad over the years, where they didn't play last week. A lot of players didn't play, and they can rotate and they can mix and match, and then they go out and they bring this level of intensity. Obviously, they'll know what it's like playing against Saracens. You know, it'll be in the back of their heads what happened in the final last year over in Newcastle, where Saracens were so physically dominant, and bringing that level of power and aggression to a new level. And that's something that would be a slight concern. But I think there's enough experience in the Leinster side. And a lot of time, going back to when I played myself, is it's a mental thing. It's knowing it in your head. It's speaking it as a pack of forwards. And it's knowing that, you know, you go half-hearted into Billy Vunipola, you're going to end up back in your backside. Jamie George, Vunipola, Vincent Cock, they're a very, very strong, powerful front row. Atoje is going to be a nuisance all day. And these guys have an ability to not just make a tackle, but to wrap you up, slow the ball down, frustrate you at the breakdown. And it's how Leinster deal with that, because, you know, the template will be to be unbelievably aggressive and get in Leinster's faces. And we've seen England do it with Ireland the last couple of years, with an incredible amount of intensity off the gain line, you know, when they don't have the ball, and just putting massive pressure. So I think it's you know, Leinster have got to be shrewd in the way they play this game and play in the right areas. But the aggression and the power is going to go up another level. And I'm sure Leinster will talk about that and they'll understand that. But they haven't had that kind of physical test in a while. And it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out. But there's enough experience there to understand that they know what's coming. Saracens are not going to be as strong as that team last year. That's the reality. There's no Owen Farrell. There's no Will Skelton. He's with La Rochelle now. Skelton was devastating in that final with the wrap tackles and the aggression he showed. And he's 20 stone, powerful, 6'5" or 6". And Farrell is a massive loss to him, because he really dictates the tempo and the aggression and the attitude that has made Saracens a success in bullying teams.
The Leinster back row obviously has seen a lot of change over the last couple of weeks in terms of who actually starts, except it seems like Jack Conan is the number 8 and Doris is the 6. We've seen the 2 sevens change, and it looked like it was kind of horses for courses in one way. A little bit, Will Connors came in, it seems, with the express intention of sopping CJ Stander with chop tackles, and maybe that's just because that's the overriding memory I have, but they talked about CJ Stander in the build up to that game. Are they now in that position where they can pick the 6'5" giant whose job is to be destructive, or they can pick Josh van der Flair if that's the game that they want? And there's no difference in terms of quality between these two players and the outcome that you get, but there's a difference in terms of the game plan that you're trying to affect.
Yeah, I think Josh van der Flair is more of an out-and-out open side, and you saw the pressure he put under Billy Burns under at the weekend. He was outstanding. A superb performance for him, and his fitness is a huge attribute for him, the ground he covers around the field. Connor's a little bit different, and as you said, the chop tackle on chop tackling ability, him, the tackle technique is phenomenal. He just takes away any sort of momentum, and he's very, very physical, a bit more physical than Josh van der Fleer. So I suspect that with the threat of Billy Vunipola, that Will Connors may start that game. And I've always said this, and it's very evident, and you don't have to be a rocket science to understand this. Our Billy Vunipola, when he plays well, England win, and when he and Saracens win. When he gets over the gain line, when he hurts the opposition, if you stop him, which is not easily done, you take away a huge amount of the opposition's ability to get over that gain line and generate plays off him and run off him, because he takes, sometimes he takes two or three tacklers to stop him. He's so powerful. So I suspect they'll go with Connors to try and nullify that effect and stop Billy Vunipola. But it's an embarrassment of riches. I think, you know, we haven't seen a lot of Max Deegan in the last few weeks. He's an exceptional player. Caelan Doris he's taken his performance to a really consistent level now, that he looks really comfortable, dominant, confident, wants the ball. He's winning lineouts, he's winning turnovers. His all-round game is fantastic, and he's been brilliant the last few weeks. And I think Jack Conan just offers that. I thought he was very, very unlucky the other day with a couple of the penalties. He couldn't roll away, and they were penalties, but you know, he made something like 20 tackles. His work rate is phenomenal as well, and I'm a fan of his. And there's just so many options with Dan Levy maybe coming back, Scott Penny as well, and you know, Reese Ruddock, we haven't seen him either. So many options there, but I suspect it'll be Will Connors and Doris and Conan for Saracens on Saturday.
Because the physical challenge. Where's Caelan Doris at? Is he going to have to be a six because there are two other eights at Leinster? And is that the place that he should establish himself now for the next 3-4 years and try and be the six on the Lions and try and be the best six in the world? Is that, like, if you're sitting down with him as an advisor, long term, medium term, what's his career prospects?
Probably, I think. Obviously, he's played most of his rugby as an eight, but he's now playing as a six, which is not a problem, I think. Number eights can play six easily. Six is probably, I'm not sure they can play in that position. Of course, physically they can, and they have the physical attributes. But, you know, playing number eight is, you have to think your way through the game a little bit more. But Doris is a very intelligent rugby player, and he's someone could easily slip back in and be a very, very dominant number eight and play well there. But he's a great line-out option, and his ability to break down is very, very good, and he's improving all the time. I think the try he scored the other day, he's involved in a carry before that and a clean-out, and then just gets back up off the ground, and you can see him clapping the hands, and he just can see a gap and a space, and his footwork is really good. So I'm not sure he has to really say, well, I can only play number six now because that's where I want to play for Ireland, and that's where I'm going to excel. Because I think he has that versatility. He doesn't have to nail himself down to being just a number six, but I think he's probably, that's a position now where he's going to probably end up playing a lot more. He's going to try and take on Peter Mahoney for the Irish jersey, and he may get picked ahead of him. He got selected last year ahead of him, and he's the form number six in Ireland at the moment.
And if you're Andy Farrell, do you care if he's a six or an eight?
Like, no, you don't. You don't care where he is. The one thing that I think CJ Stander and I feel sorry for him at times, because he's such an incredible work rate for a player, and he's so effective at turning the ball over as well. And he's too good to leave out of the Irish team at the moment, unless he has a run of bad games. And I think Doris is maybe possibly too good to leave out as well. So that leaves a conundrum for Andy Farrell. Does he play Peter O'Mahony or Caelan Doris? Because I think you can't leave Stander out of the Irish team, I think. And someone like Doris is more of a footballer, and he will, you know, put that bit of deception in some of his carries as well. But it's a good position for Andy Farrell to be in as well, when you have certain players in really good form coming into what's going to be ahead in November.
And what about James Lowe? How close is he to an Ireland starting berth?
Very close, I think. I'd be surprised if he doesn't play some of the games in November. He's just all action, full of energy, powerful in his carries, and just wants the ball in his hands. I love to see wingers coming in off the wing, offering themselves up off phase play or even off some of the set piece stuff where they track on the inside and they're used. He can be devastating. I think he sometimes, and this is probably will you'll see it a little bit more. It's like you get less space. The higher you go up. There was an opportunity for him to give a pass on Saturday when Leinster created a little bit of width, where he came from the wing, could have given the pass, but decided to look for defend and tuck the ball under the left hand. Whereas they're the subtle little touches that maybe you have to be better at when you play international rugby. But he's a fantastic player. Someone who you can use, and you can use him off set plays. You can use him as a strike runner. And then he's a try scorer. He knows where the try line is. He scores a lot and he's very powerful. So he's someone I think will play for Ireland in November.
All right, last question for you then. Obviously, there was a few bits in the paper at the weekend saying Leo Cullen isn't getting the credit that he deserves for his role in building the unstoppable juggernaut that is the Leinster rugby team at the moment. That's a fair enough point, really. Like, he is the architect of so much of this and has managed to keep so many players happy despite the fact that they're not getting game time.
Yeah, look, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't when it comes to Leo Cullen, because of Lancaster kind of being this shadow behind him all the time. And, you know, hearing the players in the last couple of years coming out talking about the impact Lancaster has made. But Leo, I think, he's calm, controlled, and he's done a fantastic job in piecing it all together. He was the one who probably was open to the idea of bringing in Lancaster and went and got him. And I think, you know, he deserves massive credit, I think, in what he's done there. And it's a very difficult job in some ways. It's a great job for any coach because, you know, you're successful, and he's been incredibly successful. But managing all the players and trying to keep them happy and keep them on board. And we've seen some of the players in the last number of years, guys moving on and making hard decisions around, even particularly around Fergus McFadden and Rob Kearney. You have to make ruthless decisions, which sometimes the sentimental side of it goes, and it looks unfair at times. And they're all the big calls you got to make. And he's the one that's kind of driving the whole thing. So he's pieced it all together, and he deserves massive credit for all that.
Alan, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. We'll talk to you again later in the week. Cheers.
Cheers, lads.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.